Hey everybody, it's Pastor Brian Ross from Grace Life Bible Church in Grand Rapids, Michigan. We want to welcome you this morning to midweek video number two this week. Appreciate you tuning in and glad to have you part of the channel as always. Excuse me. If you haven't already done so, if you consider subscribing and ringing the alarm bell as a way of staying current with the ministry, we go live from our assembly building on Sunday mornings, as well as when we create content for you here midweek, we certainly appreciate that. Also want to remind you about our Rumble channel here. We established this as an alt-tech site should something happen to our YouTube ministry. So if you're into alt-tech sites or just like an alternative to YouTube, please consider subscribing and checking us out here on Rumble as well. Featured book this week continues to be From This Generation Forever, Volume 1 on Inspiration. This is the first 27 lessons in our From This Generation Forever class, published notes. 340 pages of 27 lessons related to the doctrine of inspiration. So if you haven't picked that up, please consider doing that as a way of supporting the ministry. And also stay tuned for an announcement, hopefully in the very near future, regarding the publication of Volume 2 on preservation. I said a moment ago, this is my second video this week that I'm making here right now. My first one I made yesterday, and it was this video right here. From This Generation Forever YouTube Playlists Update. And the purpose of that video was to announce the creation of a series of playlists, the updating of the master playlist from that class, as well as a series of topical playlists, not only by term or by topic and section, but also really by smaller subject matters as well, subsections. There's now a playlist for William Tyndale's Bible, for the Coverdale Bible, for the Matthew's Bible, for the Great Bible, for the Geneva Bible, for the Bishop's Bible, as well as a host of other playlists that are smaller and more topical in nature. So if you are interested in getting that information or looking at the organization, please consider checking out the video from yesterday and looking at the links in the description for those other playlists. What I want to talk about in this video that I'm making here right now is I want to share some thoughts on this book right here. This was published in 2011. This is The Legacy of the King James Bible by Leland Rankin. And I picked this book up in 2011 in preparation for a message that I was asked to preach at a Bible conference. There were a lot of conferences in 2011 related to the topic and subject matter of the 400th anniversary of the King James Bible. And there were also a lot of books that were published in 2010, 2011, to commemorate the 400th anniversary of the King James Bible. And I picked up a bunch of those books at the time, read through all of them in preparation for a series of studies that I've been asked to give related to this topic in commemoration of the 400th anniversary. One of the books that I picked up is this book right here, The Legacy of the King James Bible by Leland Rankin. I want to share some thoughts on or from his book here with you here shortly. But just a few things about Leland Rankin. He's a PhD professor of English literature emeritus at Wheaton College in Wheaton, Illinois, so a bastion of evangelicalism. And he's an interesting guy. He has focused his career on, if you look at the classes that he teaches here, classical and early British literature, 17th to 20th century, Shakespeare, 17th century British literature, writing effective prose. His research focuses have been on Bible translation theory and practice, English Puritanism, Puritan context of Milton's poetry, Bible as literature, and intersections of literature and Christianity. And he has posted a series. We jump here now on Wikipedia. He's been involved as a stylist for the English Standard Version of the Bible, and has written a host of different things. Wikipedia here lists them in descending order chronologically, beginning with the Bible or the book, excuse me, that we're going to be just talking briefly about, The Legacy of the King James Bible, celebrating the 400th year. And you can see that he's also done things about translation, literary study of the Bible, and those sorts of subjects. So for Leland Rankin to write this book right here is sort of right in his, you know, educational research wheelhouse, so to speak. Now, again, just in full transparency, Professor Rankin is not a King James only person. He was involved intimately in work on the ESV, but he wrote this book, and I want to read from the afterword. Now, maybe at some point, it would be prudent or beneficial to the body of Christ to do more of a systematic review of Rankin's book here. But I'm focusing here on the afterword beginning on page 229. And I want to read some things that he says and make some comments. And there's a lot of conversation right now related to issues of readability, the King James Bible, should the King James, are the issues of readability related to the King James, have they reached such a point that the King James Bible should be laid aside in favor of a modern version? Those kinds of things are being discussed widely. And I've recalled recently Rankin's book, and I highlighted a bunch of stuff in the afterword, beginning on page 229, that I quoted and cited and read from in conclusion to a message on readability of the King James Bible from 12 years ago now or something like that. So I want to read a few things here, share a few thoughts on the afterword, okay? So it's interesting what he says. So starting at page 229, okay, he says, quote, "I have told the story of the King James Bible from its origin to the present day. It is natural to ask how we should regard the King James Version today and what the future remains for the esteemed King James tradition. I propose that we should celebrate a victory, lament a loss, and resolve to hold on to what is excellent." Celebrating a victory. "In the preceding chapters, I have told the story of triumph of the King James Bible. The major landmarks in that story include the literary excellence of the King James Version itself, its relatively quick acceptance as the best English translation of the Bible, its predominant use by English-speaking Christians for over three centuries, and its status as virtually the sole biblical influence on British and American culture even to the present day." So he's writing that in 2011. "This should be a cause for gratitude and celebration, regardless of one's preferred English Bible translation at the present moment." So Professor Rankin is identifying the immense and massive cultural, literary, and theological impact that the King James Bible has had upon the English-speaking world, particularly in Great Britain and the United States. Lamenting a loss. "What has been lost with the diminished presence of the King James Bible in English-speaking Christendom? At least four things." So Professor Rankin is going to identify four things that have been lost as a result of the King James Bible largely, not totally, but being laid aside in favor of modern version. First, he says, "We have lost a common English Bible in both the church and culture at large. It is an incalculable loss. On numerous fronts, life was greatly simplified when virtually everyone agreed on what was meant by the Bible. Conversely, many things became problematic when the agreement ceased. The same things were permanently lost, and some things, were permanently lost." See below. So there's an incalculable loss that Professor Rankin is talking about here when we lost universal agreement about what the Bible was. You know, people even in the modern parlance and conversation on this, they'll say, well, it's wrong to confuse or confound the King James Bible with the Bible itself. And I can see what they're saying to a degree. Obviously, the doctrine of preservation is important because it secures a Bible from this generation forever. So, but those modern comments also lose sight of the fact that it wasn't very long ago when there was an almost universal agreement in the English-speaking world about what the Bible was. And that was largely viewed as the King James Bible. That's been lost. That's incalculable loss, number one, according to Professor Rankin. Second, the authority of the Bible went into eclipse when we lost a common Bible. And by the way, I have literature over here on my bookshelf where Americans are writing in the 19th century, and they are calling the King James Bible simply the Common English Bible, because that's the Bible everybody used, and it was just the common Bible, okay? But second, the authority of the Bible went into eclipse when we lost a common Bible. Probably this was inevitable, but we do need to explore the logic of that line of thought here. We need to explore that logic. It is a fact that the English Bible is no longer accepted as an authoritative book in the public spheres that I have explored in this book: religion, education, law, politics, and the arts. So when the King James Bible reigned supreme, it was viewed as the authoritative book in those public spheres: religion, education, law, politics, and the arts. That is not true anymore. That is not the case. Even when modern literary authors refer to the Bible, they usually do so in a manner that challenges the intended meanings of the biblical authors. So the Bible has gone into eclipse, okay, as we've lost this, according to Professor Rankin, and it is no longer the accepted authoritative book of culture. And nothing has replaced it. The ESV, the NIV, none of the modern versions have replaced the cultural influence and impact that the King James Bible had on the English-speaking world. Third, he goes on to say, third, biblical literacy has accompanied the decline of the King James Bible. I should read that properly. Biblical illiteracy has accompanied the decline of the King James Bible. Now, I've been making this point for a long time. If the modern versions are supposed to be easier to understand, and why has general biblical literacy gone into a decline as the church has laid aside the AV in favor of modern versions? Now, listen, this is not my opinion. I'm reading from Professor Rankin's book here, okay? Third, biblical illiteracy has accompanied the decline of the King James Bible. This is widely acknowledged. When a colleague in my own department learned I was writing a book on the King James Bible and its legacy, she volunteered the observation that after the King James Bible gave way to a proliferation of modern translations, even Christian students became inept at seeing biblical references in literature. So the literary references, the biblical images, references, etc., in literature are no longer attainable or understandable or observable according to what Professor Rankin is saying here. Recently, media were abuzz with a volley shot by Andrew Motion, poet laureate of England, about contemporary students' inability to detect biblical allusions in literary courses. Motion said in a BBC interview that today's students know so little of the Bible that when he recently taught Milton's Paradise Lost, quote, it was even difficult to get beyond talking about it. So to get beyond go, in other words, like, he found it extremely difficult to even have the students interact with Milton's Paradise Lost because they were no longer understanding the biblical allusions in the literature. He goes on in the next paragraph. Claims by modern translators and Bible scholars that the Christian public is fortunate to have been delivered from the archaisms and occasional inaccuracies of the King James Version turn out to be hollow. It's Professor Rankin's words, not mine. If biblical knowledge in our day has declined across the board, where is the alleged gain from modern translations? The very proliferation of translations has discouraged the Christian public from seeking to know what the Bible actually says. Amen. If people don't have an understanding of what the Bible is, it is obvious when you compare King James Bible to modern translations that there are substantive differences in meaning. You don't have to be a PhD in English to know this, to recognize this, to understand this. Okay. It is the common people can make these comparisons and know them quite obviously. The ideal, of course, would have been for a single successor to the King James Version to be its replacement, but that didn't happen. So while, you know, I unlike Rankin, I would not advocate for using an ESV, for example, but Rankin is being honest about biblical literacy, about the cultural influence and impact of the King James, and how that has been completely lost in, largely completely lost in modern evangelical culture, okay? The sentiment is widely held that because today we find the King James Bible archaic and difficult, it must have been equally archaic and difficult for readers in previous eras. It is a great fallacy. Readers of the King James Version throughout the centuries did not struggle with its language, just as modern readers who never relinquished the King James Version manage just fine with it. Are we any better off today without the King James Version than Christendom was for three centuries with it? No. Those errors, had many advantages over us. Although we cannot turn back the clock, we should lament what has been lost, not claim an illusionary superiority. Folks, you got to think about what Rankin is saying in light of modern sort of discussion about this, okay? Then he goes on to say, he says, what has been lost? A common English Bible, a nearly universal reverence for the Bible as an authoritative book, and biblical literacy. So three things, right? A nearly universal reverence for the Bible, a common English Bible, a nearly universal reverence for the Bible as an authoritative book, and biblical literacy. Finally, we have lost the effective and literary power of the King James. Not in an absolute sense, in so much as the RSV, New King James, ESV do a wonderful job in approximating the qualities of the King James Version in updated English vocabulary. That's Rankin's opinion, not mine. But approximation is not duplication. Of course, dynamic, equivalent, and colloquial translations do not come close to the King James standard, and modern readers of those translations have no reason to gloat. They have exchanged a birthright of excellence for something manifestly inferior. So Leland Rankin makes very interesting observations about at the 400th anniversary of the King James about what has been lost by the church, by culture and society at large, from setting aside the AV in the 20th century that occurred in the English-speaking churches. Now, it's interesting. I want you to consider one thing as I sign off or conclude this video. So what we have here is the Free Religious Index, okay? This is a weekly newspaper devoted to free religion. This is volume one of a new series. This is published in Boston, Massachusetts, and notice the date on here, 1880-1881, okay? Now, I want to jump to page 103 of this PDF. So let's see if we can do that. So here we have the entry from the Free Religious Index. This is from Boston, May 26, 1881. So this is very shortly after the publication of the Revised Version in 1881. And notice there is an article called The New Testament. And that is a reference to the Revised Version that was published in May of 1881. Now, there's a whole article here. I don't have time to read the whole article. I want to read to you the last paragraph in light of what we've seen from the afterword of Professor Rankin's book, okay? Notice what it says here. And we think one of the certain effects of this acceptance of the revised version will be, now watch, the increase of more rational views about the Bible. A book that can be amended cannot be infallible. Yet thousands of readers of the King James Version have read it in the firm belief that they were reading an infallible book. So just think about that. He's identifying that in the 19th century, people that the every common day Joe Schmo reader of the AV, many of them were reading it and they believed what they had in their hands in English was infallible. They will now begin to see that that belief at least was a mistake. But since no claim is made that the new revising committee have been inspired and in their process of working with the instrumentalities of human scholarship is even frankly described, have these readers an infallible book now? So you can see the tone that the Free Religious Index is asking these questions. Have all mistakes been corrected? Are these manuscripts that are talked about, on what authority do they rest? Now watch. And so the question of infallibility, having once been started among readers who never raised it before, okay, who never raised it before, it may not rest until it reach the question of original authorship, so that would be higher criticism, and popular theories of the Bible be reconstructed on a more rational basis. Now watch. From this point of view, therefore, the revised New Testament has a special interest for liberals. Theological liberals are interested because it's going to question the infallibility belief of everyday Christians in the English-speaking world. That the revision on points where any doctrinal change is involved favors liberal Christian rather than Orthodox interpretation is also apparent. It was obvious to the people of the day that the text-critical decisions made by the Westcott and Hort text upon which the revised version was based were favoring liberal Christianity. That is not my opinion. That is the opinion of people at the time contemporaneous that evaluated the revised version's New Testament, okay? But this is a matter of much less movement than setting the Bible reader's wits to work on the question whether the Bible he is reading is an infallible book. Let the question once fairly get started among the plain thinking people of Christendom in the 19th century, and the 20th century will answer it by placing the Bible on the library shelves alongside of other historical religious books classified as one of the human literatures of the world's religions. What is the Free Religious Index saying here? Okay, they're saying that once this question got started, the result would be that the Bible would be placed on the shelf along with all of the other religious texts of human viewpoint and human literature in the 20th century. And then what do we find Professor Rankin writing in the beginning of the 21st century about what has been lost to the English-speaking world as a result of the King James Bible being replaced by modern versions? Okay, folks, the dots here are not that difficult to connect in what happened, how it happened, why it happened, and how we got to be in the situation that we're in today. So I would commend to you checking out Leland Rankin's book here, The Legacy of the King James Bible. It's interesting for a lot of other reasons other than what I shared with you in this video from the afterword. And I think that we need to think long and hard about some of the claims that are being made. And do those claims really historically jive with what actually took place and what has actually happened? And I just want to leave you with one other thing. I want to talk to you about one of the playlists I created. This is the playlist of pre-modern history of the English Bible. It starts with the origin of the Anglo-Saxon Gospels. It goes through John Wycliffe, Gutenberg and the printing press, the fall of Constantinople, and how that affects the Renaissance and transmission. A few lessons here on Erasmus and the Greek New Testament, and then one on Martin Luther. So there's some good history here of the Bible. If you're interested in checking out this playlist, I'll leave a link in the description for this video. Folks, if you are enjoying our videos here, if you consider liking, subscribing to the channel, if you would like the video, leave a comment, share this video. We would certainly appreciate that as a way of getting the word out about this channel. And folks, before we go here, the most important question that you're ever going to encounter in your entire life is, are you saved? Have you settled the issue of your justification before the law bench of a righteous and holy God? Okay. God, the only thing God can accept is perfect righteousness. And what he does is he gives us his very righteousness, the very righteousness of Jesus Christ, when we trust in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ as the only total complete payment for your sin. If you've never settled the issue of your eternal state, of your eternal destiny, do it today before it is everlasting too late. Jesus Christ, the moment that you trust and believe that he shed his blood for you on the cross, was buried and rose again, the victor over sin and death, he will give you eternal life and his righteousness as a free gift. You'll be taken out from under the power of darkness and translated into the kingdom of his dear son. Trust Jesus Christ today before it's everlasting too late. Thanks for your attention, and we'll see you next time.